Welcome to my very first connection point. I have Wendy Felice from the Belonging Center to join us today. Wendy, will you please introduce yourself?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Alan. It's my honor to be your first guest. I am so excited about the year ahead with you as president. So my name is Wendy Felice, and I direct something called the Center for Inclusion and Belonging, which is a newish project of the American Immigration Council. We launched it just a little over a year ago. You know, the American Immigration Council is AILA's longest standing nonprofit partner. We were actually created by the AILA community in 1987. So we were really stood up to do lots of great litigation work, practice advisories, things like that. And then really the latest birth is the Center for Inclusion and Belonging. And the center is really meant to house the sort of narrative and culture shaping campaigns that the American Immigration Council wants to set up. And so I'm looking forward to talking to you about all of that work.
Great, that's excellent. So the reason that I invited you, besides the point that I love you and that we've worked together for so many years and the strong relationship between our boards, is because so many of our members want to be influencers. They want to sort of be able to talk about immigration. And you wrote an article, co-authored an article recently that's super important to the membership with sort of having a foundation of how to move into these difficult spaces. Being the Southerner that I am, I used to go to parties and they always used to say, don't talk about religion and don't talk about politics and you'll do fine. And I think that we're in a different space right now. So how should attorneys sort of be looking to talk about immigration at their community level?
I love that question. And I love thinking of AILA attorneys as influencers, because I really think that there are lots of ways that the AILA community influences the immigration debate. And I think sometimes people forget that they have this other role they play, you know, as members of their faith community, as members of their local community, as someone you're just sitting down to dinner, you know, with other people, and you have this opportunity to influence them. And so I love thinking about that. And I think the way immigration lawyers should think a little bit about having conversations with lay people, not talking about with each other, but really when you're out there with lay people who don't spend as much time as you do thinking about and practicing immigration law, there's some really basic tips that, you know, I would recommend to people. You know, one is absolutely don't get into an argument, right? Because we know arguing really shuts people down and doesn't allow you to advance a conversation. So I think there's new ways we can really think about talking about immigration. I think one that is the easiest is to tell stories. You know, we tend to want to, you know, rattle off lots of facts and figures, and facts and figures are important. They're certainly part of it. But I think for people who are kind of ambivalent on immigration, I don't think facts and figures is what's going to change their minds. It's storytelling. So you could tell the stories of some of your clients. You can tell the long waiting list people wait in, you know, the efforts they're making to, you know, potentially legalize and haven't been able to. So I think storytelling can be really important. And help invite an immigrant to dinner. You know, let someone meet someone who is different from them and hear their story in their own words. So when you're hosting your dinner parties, you know, make sure you invite people so that they have a moment to connect, you know, across difference. And not just in the immigration and non-immigration context. Make sure you're inviting lots of diversity to your dinner parties. These are safe and important ways for people to get to know each other. And it shifts norms when you do that, because it shows people, you know, in your inner circle that it's great to do that, to advance, you know, a duplicity or a diversity of perspectives around a dinner table. Democrats, Republicans, African-Americans, immigrants, non-immigrants. I mean, I think that's really what we need to restore in a big way, is our ability to just connect and talk to people who are different than us. I would say, you know, really to caution folks is, you know, immigration has become very sacred to some people, you know, both people who are very supportive of immigration and people who aren't. You know, the issue of a border wall, for example, for some people is very sacred that it be built. And for some people, it's very sacred that it not be built. And so you have to tread lightly around the issues that people feel like they've already made their mind up. And that's not always a starting point for having the conversation. So I would be thoughtful about, you know, if you feel like you've pinched a nerve, let it go and move into another area. That's why storytelling can actually be really effective, because if it helps someone understand perhaps why somebody crossed over, when they understand their story of what they were leaving behind, what they were hoping to achieve, things like that. And then I just keep in mind that we're all dealing with the zero-sum mindset, which is a really powerful motivator when people think about immigration, but when they think about lots of issues. You know, Americans tend to think if another group gets something, power, rights, dignity, somehow their group is going to lose out on that. And that's wrongheaded, you know, but it is hard for a lot of people who are struggling right now to put themselves in that abundance mindset, or if they're on the defensive. So it's trying to invite that conversation about how can we all do better, right? We all do better when we all do better. How do we start to have those conversations and help folks not feel like they're going to lose out on something because, you know, we pass good immigration policy? No, actually frame it about as, you know, what do we all gain if America had a really smart immigration strategy and policy?
I think one of the things that I've learned most with working with you, especially on this Spelunky, is that we don't show up in communities as an immigrant or an immigration lawyer alone. I show up as a male, I show up as an African-American, I show up as a Southerner, and that all of these issues right now, there's a lot of political divide among all of them. And that sometimes it's about building the partnership on the issue that might not be your issue first, but just knowing that you're building the coalition. Could you speak to a little bit about building that coalition, building that trust?
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts off with relationships, you know, obviously. People don't show up for people they don't know and they don't care about. And so, you know, in the case of asking people to show up on, you know, to defend the rights of immigrants or show up to a rally, they're not going to do that if they don't know any immigrants. They don't care about them. You know, a Caucasian group is not necessarily going to show up to defend the rights and dignity of African Americans if they don't know any and they don't know their struggle and they don't feel invested in it. And so much of this just goes back to relationships. It goes back to these starting points where we get to know each other and care about each other. And then I can't stand that you're living without your rights and your dignity. I can't let that stand because I love you and I care about you and you're my friend. There's no shortcut for building those relationships. And that's why we have to do that. You know, we have to be involved in our community. We have to be involved in our alumni associations. We have to reach out and meet people who are different than us and start to build those bridges so that we can do the, you know, fighting for rights and the good things later. But I think that there's just, it's hard work and there's not a shortcut to that. And because we've lost so many of the places where we come together in community, right? Like fewer people are going to church these days and the Kiwanis Club and the Lions Club are sort of dwindling places. But what's really cool about AILA and an increasing number of professional associations is that's where people are finding their identity and their belonging. It's through their professional association. So not only is AILA giving you this opportunity to become better at your job and a better practitioner, it's giving you an opportunity to know people who are very different than you. And I think in a way, that's what's so important about your presidency, Alan, is because you know there's not enough Black folks in the immigration bar. I know that. You know that. There's a growing number of people of color in the immigration bar, and that's great. And that gives people a chance to get to know people who are different. But you share something in common, which is you love to practice immigration law. And so that's the kind of binding identity that you have. And because you come together around that, you start to learn, oh, you know, I haven't met that many East Asian people. I haven't met that many African. I haven't met that many Latinos. And it gives people a really important opportunity. So I'm excited that professional associations are becoming these new places where relationships are built. But the AILA, you know, community must and the chapters, and you guys are great at socializing, and that's kind of the beautiful thing about AILA. But that socializing and connecting personally is really important work. So y'all make sure you keep drinking together, hanging out together, and having fun together, because those relationships over time, you know, yield a lot more good than just having friends. But, you know, caring about each other's place in society, everybody's sense of dignity and equity and fairness, then you'll show up for each other. And we've got to like replicate that in as many places as we can.
And that's really my presidency model, is about building community and who should be in the room, who isn't in the room. And if you're in the room, are you seen in the room, right? There's a lot of steps to that sort of model. One of the things I think that attorneys struggle with, academic people sort of struggle with, is they feel they walk in a room and they need to be right. And the need to be right sometimes changes the conversation from a positive result, because it's so important that they're right. I mean, many times we see this shirt that's blue and green, depending on how you look at it. And we should understand these issues are also that way. So how do you help us sort of frame away from the conversation of saying, listen, this isn't about right or wrong. This is really about engagement and understanding.
Yeah, no, it's so good. I mean, everybody has the desire to want to be right, right? And we all feel like what we have, you know, a bias. We think we possess all the knowledge already, right? And so it's a problem, you know, something I jokingly say is, and I think I got to this point after working on immigration for so long, is I don't need to be right. I just want to win. I just want to win dignity and rights and good policy for people in this country. And that to me is more important than being right or being seen as the smartest person in the room. And so I do think it takes a little bit of sort of desire and thinking about what is the outcome you want? And if the outcome you really want is to move immigration policy forward, to create a country and a climate that is not only accepting of immigrants, but so happy people want to come here and help us keep this country strong. Like, in order to get there, we are all going to have to do our part. And that's going to mean, in a sense, helping to depolarize the issue. We can all fight about immigration policy all day long. There's smart people, who can beg to differ, and we can have these arguments, but it doesn't move the needle and it doesn't depolarize the issue. And I think we want to get back to a place where they pass immigration reform every few years. It's boring. No one cares. We need an update. We need new caps, new provisions, whatever. We do it. No one blinks an eye. That's where we need to get, being in a place where all you have to say is this November will be 35 years since we passed comprehensive immigration reform. To me, that says we got to do something differently if we really want to get reform. And I don't think it means yell louder. And I don't think it means dig your heels in deeper. I think it means we really got to start thinking out of the box about how we unstick this issue, how we help to depolarize it, turn down the temperature on it. And, I jokingly say this, make it boring again. So no one pays that much attention when Congress passes new laws.
The other concern that a lot of ALA members have that I've spoken to, and I think it's important to note that you're not an attorney, right? We are dearly members of the communication having a conversation that's not based on law. We're not talking about the regulations and the code. And I think that one of the things that people struggle with is they're sidelined because they might walk into the room and say the wrong thing because they're from, they were born in the 70s or they were born in the 80s. They sort of want to say, I was born during this time frame. And, my response to that always is, listen, you know how to use a cell phone. Cell phone didn't exist when you started talking on the phone. So you can sort of make these adjustments to sort of be able to have these communications. But I also think that in this space, we all need to be vulnerable to get things wrong, right? About things we don't know about, because that's the only way we're going to learn those communities is to make that mistake. But then to make the mistake from a place of love of saying, oh my God, I didn't know. You made me aware. So that takes two people. That takes me being brave enough to try something and you being brave enough to educate. So yeah. Tell me how that works.
So I think that a lot of people these days walk around with these political alarm systems on. And it's very easy to trigger these things. And then people get very upset because they feel like their alarm system has been triggered. I get that. I understand that. That's kind of like very pervasive in society. I think what I ask people to do is when you're going to go and talk to people about the issue of immigration, take off your political alarm system, disarm it, undo it, turn it off, use the keypad, turn it off, and go in a room and talk about immigration. And if someone says something that uses the wrong terminology or says something that triggers you, you don't like the way they've expressed something, I really encourage you to be the cultural anthropologist and say, what is underneath that? Why did they use that word? Where did they learn that word? Why do they feel the way they do about this border wall or about what we do with young dreamers or whatever? And get underneath it. Treat it like you're a cultural anthropologist rather than someone who needs to correct everyone. So I think it's a certain sense of humility and curiosity that we really have to bring back to the conversation, I think is really important. And then something I tell my students is, don't call people out, call them in. Sometimes people make mistakes because you're right. They don't know, right? They're ignorant. They don't know the way kids like to say, like to talk about a particular issue or how the generation has changed their conversation. And so like calling people in and just, again, trying to get underneath that. Why do you use that word? When you use that word, for me, that's what I'm hearing. And it's super uncomfortable for me. Where did you hear that? I have in-laws who are in their 70s and 80s, stuff comes out of their mouth sometimes that I'm just like, oh my goodness. But that's the way they were acculturated and the way they learned to talk about stuff. But you can talk to them about it and say, why did you use that word? And they would say, oh, we always used that word and it was normal. And then you can call people in and people can learn. But if you teach them with love, if you hit them over the head, they're a little less likely to learn. But I think that's back to sort of like polarization again. It's like everybody's got this really hair trigger alarm system on and is ready to go off and show how smart they are and show how much they know. And that's getting us literally, in my view, really nowhere quickly. We're going to get somewhere much quickly when we try to get underneath that, be that cultural anthropologist and try to really be curious and learn. If someone's a bigot or someone's really awful and they're not going to change, I'm not saying go hang out with that person and torture yourself. You always have to be, you know, psychologically and physically safe. But I bet, you know, a large number of people you can learn and want to learn, you got to give them a chance.
And I think this is useful to our clients because I think that understanding, that sort of societal community understanding, helps us understand the stress that immigrants are sort of going through right now, the change in the administration, and that empathy could help us all be better attorneys. So maybe some of these sort of belonging exercises, because we all grew up in unique groups, right? I mean, if you're in a society or a place in the United States, you could potentially not run into a lot of minorities, not by choice, just by where you were born, right? It's not an option. And so how do you see that helping us be better attorneys to our clients by having a better understanding of this belonging? Because these people are choosing to come in to belong.
Yeah. I mean, I think that anybody who enters the practice of immigration law, by and large, or all the people I've spoken to, has a certain appreciation for people who move here from other countries, probably a certain curiosity about that, and a connection to it. And so I think that already shows like incredible empathy. You all aren't tax lawyers, right? You guys picked being immigration lawyers. And so I think there, in a lot of cases, there's so much empathy in the bar to learn people, to learn their stories, and quite frankly, to help people, you know, achieve their version of freedom, the American dream, you know, however it is that you define it. And I love that that empathy is there. And I would urge, lend that same empathy that you have for your clients to people who think we need a border wall, stat. Lend that same empathy to people who are afraid immigrants might be taking their job. Lend that same empathy that you guys so beautifully show to your clients and show it to people who haven't been exposed to immigrants, who maybe live in a new receiving community. They're not from New York and Los Angeles. They're from Des Moines. They're from Salt Lake. They're from, you know, Decatur, Georgia. Like, it's places that, you know, 20 and 30 years, immigration is a relatively new thing. So I think empathy, we tend to think empathy just extends to folks that are marginalized, but empathy, everyone feels like they're being marginalized these days. Everyone feels like they're being pushed out. Everyone's feeling like they're being, you know, less, you know, they have less importance in community and in society. So I think we just have to extend that sense of empathy to everyone, you know, until we're sure they don't deserve it, but at least to go in with the assumption that people deserve a shot. And then the other thing I always say to immigration attorneys, and I have to get this in, is when you guys are writing briefs, when you're, you know, adjudicating a case, all that, use all the technical language, call people TPS holders and asylum seekers, do all that. But when you go out into community and you talk about people, don't use the terminology from the INA. Because most Americans don't know what a TPS holder is. They don't know what TPS is. They don't know why they're holding it. They don't get it. So tell them about your client, Felix, who's a soccer coach, who's raising three kids here, who's, you know, done his renewal every year with the government and is, you know, is in good faith trying to keep up with his case. And he wants to stay here because he's taking that soccer team to the state finals. That helps me connect to them. And I think that's what's been so strong all these years about that dreamer narrative, right? The story of the dreamers. Because who isn't a dreamer, Ellen? If anybody's a dreamer, you're a dreamer, right? I'm a dreamer. I can relate to that. I can't relate to a TPS holder. I don't know what that means.
And one of the things as we sort of move towards the end that I learned in sort of building community is when you walk in a room, rather than tell people what they want or talk about people without them, it's best to ask people, what do you need? How can I help? So Wendy, from AILA Community to you, how can we help the Center for Belonging? What can we do?
You know, the Immigration Bar has been so amazing and supportive of the American Immigration Council since we started. So it's just that ongoing support that you guys provide, obviously financially, but keeping us in the loop of what's going on in your practice, you know, how we can advance the work of the council. And then just from my perspective is be good ambassadors. You guys have so much power to change people's minds on immigration. If you're just willing to listen and teach and be empathetic and call people in, I think 15, 16,000 people, that's a whole amazing army of narrative change strategists that we can deploy across the country. So that would be my biggest ask for the AILA community.
Well, thank you for this time, Wendy. And as we speak to the membership, I will tell you today you've been anointed. Now you are empowered to go out and be an influencer with the, you don't have to wait for someone to ask you to do the change. Be the change that you want to see. So I want to thank you so much for this conversation. It'll be a continuation. And ALA members, please go to the American Immigration Council's website, find the Center for Belonging, share information from there, and grow in your practice. So thank you again, Wendy, for this excellent conversation.